What's going on, everybody? It's Kevin McCove, and welcome to the McCove Mindset Podcast. Today is another segment of the Collaboration Socialites. It gives me great joy and honor to do this next interview, which is with someone who's become a really good friend of mine, James Spaulding. He's just really an awesome human, awesome individual. He's got a great story, a wonderful mind, and yeah, he's making some art in Collaboration Social. So, without any further ado, let's get to it. How'd you get involved in the music anyway? How'd you get started?
Right, let's actually properly do this, yeah. So I finished your equivalent of high school when I was 17. Because I skipped a year. I skipped our fourth year of high school. I moved to the countryside during that summer. So I went to college and did computers, went to do computer applications and software programming. That's the name of the course. I did the course, but I didn't take it seriously even slightly. I was just messing around, playing pool with my buddies, playing snooker, playing football, partying, doing everything else but focusing on the actual college work. And I dropped out. I didn't actually finish the exams at the college, of course. Typical ADHD type territory, right? Spend the whole time doing it but not finishing it. So I was back home in my mom's place, and I started hanging out with my friend Niall a lot more, and he was awesome on the guitar. He is one of those guitar players who learns everything meticulously, the parts of he knows all the Joe Satriani, Slash, Steve Vai, he knows everything off by heart, all the solos, all the riffs. I was like, can you show me a few things, So yeah, he gave me a couple of hard first lessons. He gave me the worst guitar he had from his collection of guitars. That was a project guitar that was there was no paint on it. The frets were really difficult. The distance of the strings and the neck was really awkward.
The action.
It was horrible to play. And he was like, look, I'm giving you this horrible guitar because if you really want to and you push yourself on this horrible guitar, once you get a normal guitar, it'll feel like butter. So just stick with it. He was a bastard, but I understand his methods, So I just spent an entire year literally just in my mom's place, in her kitchen. I had my PC in the kitchen, and I was just there all day, just learning bits of songs. I didn't even ever learn an actual complete song for that whole year, which is weird. It was just whatever I was fascinated enough with. I would just learn I love the riff for that song. Oh, pirates, yes, they rap. I just learned the riff. I was like, oh, I love that. Just learn that. Next. And just kept learning parts of everything. And then after a year, I was like, I could play so much stuff. But it was all obviously other people's stuff, right? There was no writing.
Whose stuff was it though? So who was influencing all of the stuff that you were learning? Were you learning in a genre? Were you learning everything all over the place?
Everything in loads of genres, man. Just stuff that I liked,
Obviously.
Yeah, I was big into Zeppelin back then. I learned loads of Zeppelin stuff. Then after a year and a half, I moved to Dublin. I started working as a waiter. I left that job after a while. And at that point, I'd already made friends with a bunch of Brazilians. I started working in the city. Point, man, after a year and a half of playing the guitar, I was already head first in, addicted, totally addicted to it. And following the music, I guess, already at this point. I don't know if that makes sense, but maybe it does to most people who are musicians, but almost following your intuition and all right, this is good. I'm going to follow whatever opportunities arise because of music at this point. So I met this guy in work, and he had this big group of friends that he introduced me to. And there was a load of musicians in that group, and they were all just really cool guys. And we immediately just hit it off and became friends. And there was this big group of us. And we were young, man. We were in our 20s, stoners, kind of hippies. We really really into it, and we really, really believed in it to a state where we would neglect everything else in our lives at that point. The name of the project was The Re-Love Yushin. And we're still together in a way, even though the band doesn't play. Like, we're still, like, we still talk to each other, like we still live together. Because we ended up living together in Brazil, basically, eventually. And we still talk to each other like we're brothers today. Like, so it's a bond that will never, ever die, like, which is cool.
So what happened? I mean, there's obviously challenges that you faced during this career. And like, so
yeah,
what?
Big time.
What happened?
So we spent a good few months like playing together and just like, you know, I guess figuring out stuff together and writing songs together. And there was a wider group of friends as well, which was kind of around that whole vibe. It wasn't just the band itself. There was like a group of probably 30 or 40 friends. In 2008, then there was like the talk of the recession near the end of the year. And a bunch of that group of friends all went back to Brazil. And a couple of the guys from the band included as well. By the beginning of 2009, the three guys had all gone back to Brazil. So the project in limbo. And we were like so into it still. So we were still like talking on the phone and, you know, like it was mostly Skype back then to make phone calls. So we'd be like calling each other on Skype and like, oh yeah, come on, come over to Brazil, you know, spend a little bit of time. We'll do some music over here, you know, see what happens. So that was January when we started doing that in 2009, started talking about that. I went to the US in the summer in 2009 because I wanted to go meet my biological dad before I did anything long term. It felt like I was going to go for a couple of months, but it just felt in the back of my mind that it was going to become a long term thing. And then I kept saving up cash to go to Brazil at the end of the year. And I went in December 2009. And we all got together. We played like some festivals. We bought a hippie van together. One of the guys sold their cars. Two of the guys sold their cars so that we could buy a hippie van.
Wow.
We had like an artist guy who joined and he like graffitied the entire van on the outside.
So how long did that last? You said it was a year?
Yeah, it was about a year solid where we were kind of doing it the whole time.
And was all this live music or was it recorded?
Mostly live music, yeah.
So when did you get into the recording space? Like when did you start recording?
Right around when the band was breaking up.
Of course, right? You know, when I didn't have the band anymore is when I decided to record.
Because the band had become more, at that point we were living in Salvador. So that's where the artist name comes from, Salvador James, because I ended up living in this place called Salvador. And yeah, we were really embraced by the musicians there and by the music business there and the music culture there. You know, it just became a really special experience for us there. We were playing a lot. We were playing every week, three or four times a week, live. And a couple of other people had joined the band at that stage. Because we didn't actually have
original music, or was it cover music or a blend?
A blend, yeah. A lot of originals, and then like we had to throw in a bunch of covers as well because we were being paid to go and play in like this big restaurant chain that had like outdoor seating area. So we would like pull up with the hippie van and use that as the backdrop of the stage, and then like sit in front of the van and play like to all the people outside the restaurant.
Wow,
it was pretty sweet, man.
I mean, you were playing out live all the time. What got you to the space that said, I want to record the music now?
Yeah, because back then people would always come up and ask you for a CD, you know? There was no Spotify or anything back then.
Right.
So everyone would always come up and ask for CDs. And we didn't have CDs. We would have made much more money probably if we had CDs because we didn't have any. But yeah, if we had been selling CDs, we would have made more money. So we'd always talk about it. And then we were in 2011, around February, around Carnival time, was when Bruno, one of the band members, and his girlfriend, Maria, who was together at the time, they decided they were leaving. And they just took the van and just left. Just went to Sao Paulo.
And y'all were just there with no cars, no vans, no nothing. It's like,
Wow. So the other Bruno, like they had fallen out. The two Brunos had fallen out. They had an argument, whatever. And they were just like, look, we're going, whatever.
Yeah, we don't talk about Bruno.
I know. I'm still best friends with him forever, man. We can't fall out. We love each other too much. Like, so the other Bruno went back to the countryside where his family are from, and he got back his original car that he had sold, which was that it was a Beetle, an old Volkswagen Beetle. So we went from a Volkswagen hippie van to a Volkswagen Beetle. And we had to squash everybody into this little car, and we kept playing because we still had the gigs to play, you know. And I was like, dude, we have to record because like, it's coming up on 2 years that I've been here, and I'm going to go home for a while. I'd already met my current wife at the time, you know, who was my girlfriend at the time. And I was like, dude, I want to go back to Ireland and try and save up some money, see my family, see my grandpa. I want to do some stuff back home. I'm going to go home probably at the end of the year. So let's start recording and see if we can get like a few songs recorded. And that ended up being like, we wanted to record the whole album. And because we found this really cool sound engineer called Duda, who was like super like professional, and like he was putting discipline on us when we went in like to do the stuff. He was making us do everything properly. And because we were messers, man, we were just young stoners who really didn't have a clue about quality, like in terms of recording, you know, because we'd never done it before. It was a great experience, man. Like, and Duda was such a good like partner in the whole experience. He gave us like a really good rate. He gave us a good friend's rate, and he helped me to like organize myself around all the songs and list out all the songs. He said, look, before we start, record a demo on the click of all of the songs. So at least in your head, you understand like the structure of all the songs. Cause I was thinking like, we just go in with everything in my head and then we just do it in the studio. So we came in with like 15 demos or whatever. And then we recorded like 11 songs over the space of a couple of months.
So that was like your first, it sounds like anyway, you know, like all this is very collaborative, but in the recording and writing and arranging and like the real education around it seemed to have come from this guy.
That whole experience in Brazil was like leveled up 50-fold in music, you know? Yeah, I went home December 2011. So in 2012 was when I was in Ireland for like 6-7 months. I was back home, saving up money to come back and move in with my missus and kind of like try and start fresh again, I guess, in Brazil, but like start a life again, like kind of with her, and we're going to get married and all that kind of stuff had already happened too. So yeah, I went home for 6 or 7 months, saved up a bunch of cash, and then went back to Brazil again in like July 2012. We got married in November, started over like life again over there. So I've started over a bunch of times in life, man. Like, as in, that's what it feels like anyway. Like, started from zero again. Like, no money in the bank. Like, no, nobody knows you. Like, that kind of start over, you know? Because I had to do it again when I came back in 2016. After living there, I worked in a music school and did loads of really cool stuff then for the following 4 years.
Now, were you recording music during that time? Like, were you an artist career during that time?
Not so much, no.
So from 2011, so virtually when you leave Brazil and you go to Brazil, you have a blackout of a music career.
Yeah, so I always kind of knew that I needed to kind of have more options, like in parallel. I always just knew that in the back of my mind.
When was Nick born? 2016?
No, 2018.
2018, okay, so were you guys living together at this point in time?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, with family?
No, we were living together since 2012. And I did try a few times to like go back and like, okay, I'll give the music a go again for a while and see if there's a way, if there's a pathway.
Well, what, how did you do it? Was it through live performances? Was it the old?
Generally through live recordings. Cause it generally happened in a moment where I really needed to, like, as I said, start over again. So I was just like trying to get that network effect going. And like looking for any opportunity, because my money reserves were going really fast when I came back, like pay rent, all that kind of stuff, bills, like the money was just deplete like so fast. So at that point I was working like 4 or 5 jobs, man. I was delivering food on a bicycle, like, you know, those Deliveroo and like Uber Eats kind of gigs.
Yeah.
I was like delivering food on a bicycle. I was working as a chef for my friend's food truck business. I was playing music any opportunity that I could get. So whether that was singing and playing the guitar, whether that was playing guitar for someone else's act, whether that was playing keyboards for someone else's act. Can you play keyboards? How much is the gig? Yeah, it's $150. Yeah, I can play keyboards. I didn't have a fucking clue, man. Yeah, can you play? Yeah, sure. Do you have a keyboard? Yeah, I've got a keyboard. I don't have a... Like, just borrow one on the day, you know? Just... Figure it out, wing it. Can you play percussion? I mean, I lived in Brazil. Surely I can. Yeah. I can play percussion. And then, you know, the gigs came. So I was able to make okay money by leveraging those skills and just going back, doing some chefing, doing some music, doing everything. to get myself going again. The beginning of 2016, for like 6 months, I did that, like just doing a bunch of different jobs. So I also kept doing music then for a while. Like we're doing regular, once a week, I was doing a gig, you know, and again, mixing my own music with some covers in like live venues with some friends, with like a small little 3 or 4 piece band. But then I was like, at the stage then when Nick was born, I had this like epiphany moment where I was like, when he grows up, if he sees me going out every day to work, because at that point we didn't have remote working, right? It was you go out to work at 7 o'clock in the morning and you come back at 7 o'clock in the evening, right?
Right.
So he was like, I was thinking to myself, in the future, he's going to ask, like, where the fuck have you been all this time? Like, you go out every day, you don't talk about your job, and you'd spend all your time there. Like, what the hell are you doing all this time? So it's like, I don't want to have to explain to him that, like, my job is just some like random shit that I do because I'm capable of doing it, but I don't actually like it at all. I don't ever have to explain that to him so that he thinks that that's what life is.
Right.
Because for a lot of families, that's what people end up doing, right? They end up doing jobs that they don't really like just to pay the bills. So I was like, okay, I had some savings. I was like, okay, let's do entrepreneur again. Now I've got a little bit of like tech company experience in Ireland. I was like, I want to create my own tech startup. So I began doing that. So it was quite a successful, failure-filled 3 years, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you were failing forward.
Failing forward, yeah. Failing fast and failing forward and learning fast.
During the space of tech startups and all that, what was happening with your music?
Not much, to be honest. Not much. The odd song that might just come just like inspiration wise, like I just grab the guitar and write the song or whatever, and maybe like record a demo, but I wasn't doing it like actively, like regularly, like although the instruments were always still around and stuff like that, but I wasn't really like dedicating a lot of focus time to it.
So what did that change? Because I mean, you're releasing music now, you know, which is like, yeah. Well, we're having this conversation, it's like you're releasing music now, and yeah. That sounds like I fully understand now. I have a better picture, even though I've known you for a while, hearing that you had these very large pockets of time without really pushing a music career, yet it never wasn't something that you didn't come back to.
I always kept the flame alive because music is like therapy to me somehow. Music is like an outlet and like therapy for me in a way. So I know that it helps me spiritually, energetically, physically, mentally. It helps me in ways emotionally. So I always make sure that I'm doing enough to stay sane. I guess that puts everything into perspective a little bit more. Why the name Salvador James as well? Because like that place is so important to me, like in my story as a person,
yeah,
and as a musician. And I really wanted to pay homage to that because like there's more people in Brazil who ask me like, where's your music than there is in Ireland.
Right.
And there's more people in Salvador in Brazil that are asking me that question this whole time.
Well, regardless of that, it's just actually significant to you. You know, like
it is.
It's just significant to you. It doesn't matter if anybody else cares about that story or not.
Exactly.
It matters to you. Yeah. I think that like that's an important thing. Almost like it's very like how your music has been. It's been like you're in a space where you were creating it because it is significant to you. And that is how I feel also about like the song. Like, you know, Atypical Parenting is significant to you. It truly is. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, or maybe it was just last year, feels like it could have been 2 years ago, but you were like on a radio station and you were talking about autism awareness and stuff. And you were like really like geared up. You were amped up about it. And I was like, oh, like, let me look into this. That it wasn't until like then that I really understood about your son. Cause I remember that's when we started to talk about it more. I was like, okay. You know, cause there was this weird, I don't think you're like this anymore. I could be totally off, but to me, it felt like I don't know if you felt like you trusted me enough to tell me that your son had autism when I first met you, or that it just wasn't significant information. But now I feel like you wear it on your sleeve.
Oh, no, because, yeah, it was, I guess it was those last couple of years of being like a lot of self-discovery and like more self-understanding and realizing like what an autistic mind is, what like an ADHD mind is. And, you know, like I often like talk to you about like different things.
Oh, you've helped me a ton. You've helped me a ton with Gio and just like perspective. I didn't have a dad who I could talk to about stuff like this. I don't have any friends who are raising a child that has autism or is like on the spectrum. I don't know anyone. And so like when you let me in, because I was doing the same thing. I didn't tell you either. You know, like, so we were kind of just like almost hiding it. Right. And then when you opened up, you're like, when you talked about a thing, I was like, oh shit, he's like brave. Like he's brave enough to talk about this in public. He's brave enough to talk about this in public when I'm like afraid to have conversations with people that I know. And you and I at that point still really hadn't really dove into it. I don't remember it anyway of us diving into it. And then after that, I was like, oh yeah, I can talk to you about this.
Oh, 100%. You can always talk to me about it. And like, I guess.
And I can talk about it, period. Like, any men who listen to this, who are in that situation or that scenario, like.
Yeah, it's okay. Okay to be wired differently. Like, I said that in the song. It's fucking okay to be wired differently.
I love that song. It's so pure and so, like, it's creative, too. Like, the speaking kind of thing. You know, it's like. Exactly how that message needed to be delivered. The lyrics in this were delivered in a great way, spoken to you. So you feel like you're telling me a story. When I first became a dad, it was all about, you know, and it's like, yeah, I can vibe with that. This is how your monologue in my mind goes.
It's all about joy and hope and pictures, right? Because it's all you're doing. You're all like happy and you're like taking pictures of the baby and sharing things.
I'll just ask you now. Was this one of the first times that you actually had facilitated collaborations with people? Like the first time you actually really got into collaborating?
I mean, during COVID, I did it quite a lot though before I met you guys as well. That's how I've, you know, figured out how to do it online with like Soundtrap and all that, like, because there's loads of my musician friends, like I have a massive network of musicians and they were all doing nothing for a period of time during that. And they were all at home. So everyone was texting each other. Hey, what are you up to? You know, let's do something. So we all just started to figure it out. And then, you know, I already had a home studio set up. A lot of them didn't even have one. And I was like, dude, you don't really actually need one. Like, just open your laptop. And I was showing everybody how to use like Soundtrap and then like use their phone as the mic or, you know, whatever. You've got headphones? Yeah. You got a laptop? Yeah. Well, then you've got a home studio, dude. What do you mean? I don't have an interface. Yeah, but you've got a regular microphone. Like, can you plug in? They were figuring out ways and everyone was like jerry rigging their own little home studio. And we were just jamming. A lot of times we were just messing and jamming together. But then I was like, oh, you know what? I've got a bunch of unfinished fucking songs. I could use a fucking bass on. I could use some backing vocals on. So I started reaching out to everybody that I thought would be open to it. And yeah, started collaborating on loads of stuff.
Did they create with you or did you just kind of have pre-created music and just say, hey, jam on it? Or did you have the charts for them? Or
no charts. A couple of songs were written as well during that time. One really good one, which I'll try and dig out actually next. Which is called We're In This Together. I wrote a little bit of Aaron, who's a really good singer and songwriter. And a bunch of other ones as well that we wrote. That instrumental one, like I wrote that obviously with Marty, a bass player from Chicago. And we did a load of writing together. And also he did a load of playing on a songs that needed bass because he's a great bass player.
And you guys just played? Y'all never released any of this music?
Dude, he was so bored that time. He used to text me like every day and be like, hey, let's hang out later on Soundtrap. And we were hanging out in Soundtrap. So he would like go into a session, open a new session, and then call each other on the video inside of Soundtrap and just do whatever. And he'd be like, you know, let's just write something. And then we just like jam and write something together in real time. Or he'd be like, hey, have you got any like songs already that you want bass on? Like, let's do that. And then I just import the track and then we just like walk through the bass part by part. And he'd figure it out and we would just enjoy ourselves for a couple of hours. Like, so I was doing a lot of that, man. And then it came to a period in during that COVID period where things had started to open back up again a little bit. So Clubhouse was still a thing, but our Clubhouse was a thing at this point, because Clubhouse became a bit of a thing kind of halfway through that whole COVID period.
Yeah,
it wasn't at the very beginning. So I was in a startup accelerator, and a lady called Paula, who was one of the mentors, was like, oh, you should come on Clubhouse because there's a lot of startup people and you speak really well. So you'd excel on there. So she invited me onto Clubhouse. That was the invite only time.
Yeah.
That's how I got in there. So I was doing loads of startup rooms. And then I noticed, like, pitching and pitch practicing and doing all that kind of stuff, the startup-y stuff. And then I noticed there was music rooms as well. So I started joining into a bunch of the, just all the different ones, all those different ones that you know of. There was a bunch of small different communities. And one of them was the one which you were in with Martin and all those guys.
Yeah, I was in a bunch of guys. I was in like a fucking fleet, bro. I was working that shit.
That Irish guy, yeah.
Like a 13-hour job.
People were, man. That Wolf guy, who's that Irish songwriter guy, he used to be in those rooms a good bit. And I wouldn't often go up on stage, to be honest, in those rooms. I'd be like working and I'd leave it on in the background. And I'd be like just listening in as I was working. And the odd time it might pop up if I need a break from work and just... It was a nice way to kind of chat with a few people and then go back to what I was doing. Or if I was walking home, I used to walk to and from work at the time, or cycle. So either if I was walking or cycling, I'd be still on Clubhouse. but that was when I started doing a lot of collaborating during that period. And then obviously then I started to join. I joined that first room. And like, again, the chance to level up was what I saw. So that's what I did. I was like, well, Kevin and Trill, I've looked them up. I looked you guys up on like Spotify and shit. And I was like, oh no, these guys are shit hot. Like, they can actually sing. So I was like, I'm picking those two guys. So like, you guys were doing the pairing up, and I messaged the both of you and I was like, hey, let's pair up the three of us. And you were like, yeah, cool. So the first people I worked with was you and Trill. And then we wrote that summer road trip song together.
I mean, why'd you keep coming back?
A lot of the collaborations have been about, some of them have been about that, like me having the opportunity to excel, and then some of them have felt more like I needed to give other people the space to do that. So I've almost just been like the senior figure in the conversation, or not the senior figure, but the one that's less seeking that opportunity to grow, because there might not be so much space to grow in that combo that's going on with those three or four people. So sometimes it's just like that other person is really, really needs that opportunity to like excel a little bit. So it's also good to give back and to help other people. So when I participate a lot, I'm conscious of that they look at me as a producer, whatever that really means, right? You're just a musician who's figured out how to use the fucking computer to make music nowadays.
And that whole chronicling, it feels like while your relationship with music has been in these ebbs and flows,
it's helped for sure.
This has definitely been, yeah, like the consistency factor, the thread.
Yeah, the deadline as well. The whole deadline procedure where you go in, you hook up, you come back in 2 weeks with something finished helps. So that iterative cycle is because it helps me to structure things rather than just doing things sporadically. As a process helps
me. Like when I asked you to schedule. Yes, it helps, of course. Yeah, but no, I'm glad that it's helped. I really want you to put music out.
One thing I noticed after releasing that song, Atypical, and listened back to it a bunch of times, and I asked a few friends who are like really good sound engineers to give me like what their thoughts were initially, and I knew what they were going to say, but I wanted to hear it from other people. Was like when the chorus comes in, layer more vocals, like do loads of vocals and layer it to give it that life when it comes into the chorus, you know? And that's what I want some help with on the next one, because I don't have a lot of experience doing that. That'd be a huge gift if you could give that to me for the next
Absolutely. One. Absolutely. Yeah, of course. I want to help that way. Like this, it's the least I can do in terms of like I don't know how to give back enough to you. You've been, you know, at all like the collaboration socials, you help me run it when I don't have the bandwidth, or I don't have the time, or I don't have the, like, whatever, you know, the chat, the platform, that, you know, like, just everything. It's been great. You know, you are the person who I collaborate with in the collaboration social the most. It's interesting that, you know, it's like, oh, the first one. It's like, yeah. And I mean, that made a difference. Like, it made it matter. You know, I don't know if we've collaborated on music like since, but we have collaborated
on lots of things.
So much.
On life.
But yeah, I mean, what is next in your career now? What you got planned?
Man, since like 2020, I've probably 100 different songs that I've like produced and written, and they're all just sitting there in a big pile. So I need to start making my way through all of those. A lot of them are the collabs from the collaboration social too, but a lot of them are ones that have happened in between that or before that too. So yeah, I just want to start like releasing all of these songs, especially like good original ones that I just want people to hear, you know, like especially the ones that have significant meaning as well, you know, like those are the ones which are more important to me. Like it's a reflection of me at that point in time, or a reflection of me and those other people at that point in time through music. So yeah, gotta work on finishing more of those, man, and then improving each time as well. Like, so like, as I've spoken a couple of times about, like, I enjoy that, like, challenging myself to level up each time. So like when I'm asking you for help with a specific thing, it's because I know that if I can improve that part, then the overall quality of that little product that I release out into the world is significantly better. Like when I released the song first, it hadn't come out on the platforms yet. And Tobias messaged me and he said, "Hey man, let's tune your vocals just a little bit more. I think you've done a little bit, but let's tune them just a little bit more because it'll sound much better."
Nice.
And I was like, oh man, I'm a little bit busy. Just, you know, message me later or whatever, because it was during the day and whatever, busy with other stuff. And then I got back to him. I was like, no, let's do that. Yeah, for sure. So I actually canceled it. And so it didn't go up. I paused it. So it didn't go up to the platforms.
So that's why there was that delay.
Yeah. Yeah. So then he was like, send me the track. So I sent him the music and the vocals as separate vocal tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because there was three vocal tracks, and then he'd shown them and sent them back to me that evening. So then I just put them together and I did a little tiny bit more mixing, and then that was it, and bounced the master and off it went.
That's awesome.
But I know I could, yeah, it was a nice little save by Tobias. And I've got like four or five other songs all around that same neurodivergent, neurodiversity topic, that most of them are actually written in September during like this one week where I just wrote a lot of songs just last September. So yeah, those are the next ones that are going to come out. And also one song which I wrote during the pandemic with my friend Aaron, which is called "We're In This Together," which is similar. It's about being a parent as well. And it's about being a dad and that whole journey. I guess in the next probably 12 weeks, there'll probably be about four or five releases.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot because I got too many to go through. I got to get those out of the way so I can get on to all the next ones, you know?
Gotcha.
I know that's not the typical way of doing things, but yeah, as you've seen, I do things.
It doesn't matter.
A different
way.
Put
the music out for you, you know? Like,
exactly.
There's no strategy that's needed if you're putting the music out for yourself. I'm looking forward to you putting out more music. I'm looking forward to the music that you end up throwing on the player. If you could say one thing to a musician who would hear this, or your younger self, what's the one piece of advice that you have learned that you would give to someone?
Yeah, it's okay to be you. And, you know, you're the best you at this point in your life. And the only person you're competing against is yourself. Like, stop comparing yourself to others. And just be comfortable in your own skin. You know, and keep being you, and you're on the right track. Like, believe in yourself, be your biggest supporter and biggest advocate, you know, and just be a good person, man. Like, that's what it's mostly about. Like, you don't bring money to the grave, you bring experiences and memories and relationships. You know, I heard a football coach who's of one of the football teams, which I don't like very much, but he's a smart guy. And he was doing an interview a few days ago because he's wrapping up this year with Liverpool Football Club. He's a German coach called Jurgen Klopp. And he said at the very end of his interview, he said a really nice thing. And they said, like, you know, give us like a phrase or something, you know. He said, right, well, I haven't got many of those because I don't like doing that kind of thing. But he said, the one thing I do realize when I look at other coaches is a lot of coaches, they collect trophies. I collect relationships. I really like that. I was like, wow. He's really like, yeah, man, he sees it differently, you know. The other coaches are there like, oh, I need to win this year because I need to. And he's a serial winner. Like, he's good. But he's in it for the relationships, and you can right. see it in his eyes. Like, and he believes that through that success comes.
Sounds like a guy I can get along with.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, man.
I just appreciate you. I appreciate you, and thank you for everything with the Collaboration Social as well. I hope to continue to build and grow this thing into everything that we have talked about.
We will. We will. Just patience. Fine. Trust the process.
Trust the process.